I like to do things a lot. So it's ironic that I'm giving a talk on doing nothing. There is a lot of green energy in my mandala. We need the doers. We need the spacious people. We need the thinkers. We need the people, people. I think of myself as a doer. So it's interesting to be giving a talk about doing nothing today. But nevertheless, this is a talk about the wisdom of non-action. This line from the closing of the 16 Bodhisattva precepts has always been one of my favorites. I started thinking about it again when I completed my Shuso term just a few months ago, whenever that was. So practically on a day-to-day basis, what was it like? What is it like to do less, to have less visibility, to be ordinary, to have nothing to prove? Having less to do lasted about a flash. It was sweet. But the koan continues. What does it look like to cease, to not cling, to be a person of no rank, of no location? These terms are found in the writings of 7th century Chan masters, whose teachings have been an inspiration to me as I've explored this koan. So Chan became prominent around the 6th century Common Era. It was among several schools of Buddhism flourishing in China at the time. The word means meditative absorption, and this is the school in which Dogen trained while he was in China. The Japanese word for Chan is Zen. The Chan tradition centers on non-duality and a focus on the communal sphere, on social conduct as enlightened activity that was influenced by Confucianism. Ma Su was an important figure in Chan. He lived from 709 to 788 Common Era. And he was especially known for his teachings on the ocean seal samadhi. Mind is Buddha, and ordinary mind is the way. Many important Chan masters descended from him, including Pai Chang's disciple Huang Bo, and his disciple Lin Ji, who's the founder of the Lin Ji or Rinzai school of Zen. During the question and answer, I would love to hear if anyone knows of any Chan nuns that were practicing in this time. I didn't make the time to research that. But I have read that Huang Bo's enlightenment story involves an encounter with a woman that he met on a path while traveling. So what did all of these folks have to say about doing nothing? Here's Pai Chang. The path of enlightenment is one of not making or selecting anything. Anyone in this room who just completed Sesshin knows what this is like. We come to retreat and we're asked to do what we don't want to do. We don't get to do what we do want to do. And this is ripe for all kinds of doing. Thoughts, emotions, and actions are all likely to ripple out. So when we lessen our choice, our ability to fulfill our ego desires can be difficult and fruitful practice. Of course, anyone with a job and a family and responsibility knows what this is like as well. It is the practice of renunciation. It relates to Kakinyo's talk last week. We all gave up something to be here today. We chose to do nothing. But it's also responsiveness. It's a receptivity to what is needed for the community. Again, conduct as enlightened activity, a laying down of the small self. Ma Zhu is also known for the phrase ocean seal samadhi. This mind does not resist anything, it is unhesitating acceptance. Ma Su writes that taking in all things, it is like the 100,000 streams equally returning to the great ocean. All are designated ocean water, and so savoring one taste is to take in all the tastes. This oceanic mind is a focus of Chan, its complete relaxation. The term no mind is originated or attributed to Huang Po, and it's sometimes described as complete relaxation, a non-clinging of the mind. During retreat, Daigai asked me a Jisha question while we were in the waiting area for Sanzen. And I couldn't answer. And I tried to explain, I don't have my Shuso brain on. I don't have my Jisha brain on. And he just looked at me and he said, "Oh, you have no brain." I said, "Yes." You got it. So, where do I tend to get caught? Both in my dealings with myself and with others. For me, it's anxiety. And what if I just stop adding to that? I'm getting more and more subtle about noticing this, getting to the deep layers of non-clinging mind, of no mind. When there's a perceived problem, I watch the tendency to add more. More buzz, more thinking, more doing. What if instead we just quiet down? Can we just quiet down the ego self and not create more karma? Just quiet down. Of course, karma isn't bad. We're made of causes and conditions. But can we notice when something is generating a negative cycle in our lives or for those around us? We can't really know the true breadth of our actions, and the goal isn't to try to get caught up in knowing. Just notice what creates suffering and cease. Quiet the mind. I've been experimenting. I have a situation that occurs pretty much every day during the training week, and it just pushes every single button that I have. It's been great practice because I haven't done anything. I haven't said anything to anyone. I just watch what happens. And sometimes I get pushed into like, well, maybe I'll try to affect it by just this little subtle way. Maybe I can make a little change. And instantly I notice the tension, the suffering, the idea that I hold about how the situation is supposed to go and isn't. So it's just been like miserable. Excellent practice every day of the week. And it only lasts about 10 minutes. Anyways. It's one that I've chosen not even to say anything. Like sometimes I'll just get things like this off of my chest by talking to my teacher, and then it doesn't go any farther. But this one, it's like even talking about it will create karma. Can I just quiet the mind? So, of course, we feel things, anger, annoyance, frustration. We don't have to indulge it. We can choose to do nothing. So, of course, this also corresponds to the first pure precept: cease from evil and release all self-attachment. All of these teachings are pointing at the egoistic desire and how we have the choice to cease, to stop clinging. This non-clinging of the mind led me to think about the idea of cessation. In Theravada Buddhism, cessation refers to the ending of the skandhas upon the death of an arhat or a fully enlightened one, signifying the end of personal existence. The total stopping of the processes that lead to suffering. The Mahayana traditions, including Chan, point to how we can touch this unconditioned nature in each moment. To quote the title of a book many of us are familiar with, we can do it in this body, in this lifetime. It is our Buddha nature, our original mind, which is, as we say in our liturgy, joyous, selfless, pure. From Huangbo, we receive the term yi xin, one mind. He writes, "This mind has from the very beginning been independent of birth and death. It is neither green nor yellow without form and characteristics. It transcends all limitations, words, and traces. It is just this very thing. If you stir a thought, you miss it." I love this phrase from Huangpo, one mind. It invites me into the truth. Into our interconnection, which is free from duality. From our readings this week during Genzuwei, we read from Dogen, "Awakening is not self, and it is not other." One mind. What does it invoke for you? Mazu writes that ordinary mind is not making anything, not affirming or denying, not grasping or rejecting, not being common, and not being a sage. So this term ordinary mind, or being a person of no rank, this is a term that's attributed to Lin Ji. It's another relevant theme for me right now. After a year of doing Kenton each morning, now I put on my Kesa in the hall with everyone else, and I love this commonality. My goal right now is to be a floating monk with nothing to hold on to. At times, a sense of aimlessness or lack of clarity about role has felt challenging. And when the ego is involved in this way, being a person of no rank is actually perilous, scary. Whatever the thing that you cling to, that you grasp or reject, whatever the source of your suffering, responding with open-handedness without protecting can feel terrifying. Sometimes when I'm working with the precept of ceasing from evil, it's more surface level. It's usually a matter of considering from a different angle and understanding how I might have caused harm. But these deeper layers of ego and attachment, investment in a separate self, require a full relinquishment. Release all self-attachment. Walk directly into the fire. I promise you'll burn up. No location is another term from Huang Po. It's funny that this also came up in Kakunyo's talks this week. It must be one mind. These have been turning words for me over the last year. I can't locate myself. I'm not this body. I'm not these thoughts. I'm not even my consciousness. It's also much bigger, all the things that we are. In truth, there is nothing to protect. If I can show up and be fearless about this, entirely new possibilities are right there. And it's always like this. We can have faith. Equanimity is another Buddhist teaching that relates to doing nothing. It's like a buoy floating in the ocean of joy and sorrow. We can be with whatever happens. We don't get too attached. Equanimity doesn't mean not putting effort into our lives, into working for the change that we want to see. This kind of right effort is an expression of our desire to express harmony. It's an expression of wisdom. And there can be deep acceptance, whatever the outcome of our efforts. I'm aware of the weight and the responsibility of saying this in these times. Because Chan masters enjoyed paradox, now we're going to look at the idea of doing something. How much? When to assert? Sometimes we need to do something. How do we know when? I've been working with this question lately. For me, the clue is attachment or lack thereof. I can see my attachment pretty clearly in most areas, using the three poisons of greed, hatred, and delusion. As a personality diagnostic, I am a greed type. So wanting something is usually a clue that I might be attached, and I don't usually act from that place. Views, drishti in Sanskrit, can be a little more challenging. I hold some leadership at the temple, and it's useful to have experience and opinions. But I'm often wary because I know the limitations of my own perceptions. And I know the strength of my karma. Views involve other people, and that's challenging, but I am trying to welcome this challenge. Yi Xin, one mind, is not a void. It is engagement with a vast network of life that includes us. Again, from Ma Su, writing about the ocean mirror. Abiding in the great ocean is the turbulent confluence of all streams. Enlightened activity, our conduct, is a major focus of Chan. All that we are is interrelation. Last Ango, I kept having this experience where people would ask me how I am and I couldn't answer. I couldn't quite separate out from all of the interactions of which I'm a part, from that circle of Oriyoki in the morning. The ground of right action is this knowledge of our interdependence. The characters in this hall read silence and illumination. We had a visiting scholar here a few years ago, Rebecca Nee, and she told me that illumination also means giving attention. It's perfect. The stillness of our zazen that we can touch in our everyday lives is not quietistic. It is alive, inclusive, and responsive. It is doing only good and doing good for others. We can cultivate wholesome mind states. This feels like doing something. You can check out the Cultivating Compassion workshop for more about that. But we come to learn that interdependence is actually our true nature. Benevolence is actually our true nature. And then letting go isn't so scary because it's always been true. It's never not been true. Even when you feel like you're operating from rock bottom, you can't lose something that's never been there. You can dissolve habit energy. What does not doing anything look like? I'm not totally sure yet, but exploring this, I found the freedom to play. How much effort? How little? In the absolute sense, there is nothing to do because I am not actually in control. I think that's the most important truth that I've found so far. I'd like to close by returning to the 16 Bodhisattva precepts. The translation that we use is attributed to Bodhidharma, who's simplistically credited with bringing Buddhism to China, and Dogen, who traveled to China and is known for bringing Chan or Zen to Japan. So here's the entire passage that I mentioned at the beginning of this talk. There is no distinction between subject and object for any who dwell herein. All things, earth, trees, wooden posts, brick stones become Buddhas once this refuge is taken. From these precepts come forth such a wind and fire that all are driven into enlightenment when the flames are fanned by the Buddha's influence. This is the merit of non-action and non-seeking, the awakening to true wisdom. Entering our practice here and now together, we are fanning these flames. This is Bodhisattva work, to do our practice so that we can help others until all are driven into enlightenment. I think of the phrase that we studied during Genzo-e from the text that we studied, the full awakening of the great awakening. How can such powerful work come from non-action? I urge you to find out. Thank you.
If you are in the hall and have a question, please raise your hand and I'll bring you the microphone. When you have the microphone, please say your name and do your best to hold the microphone close to your mouth, like this. If you are on Zoom, please either type your name in the chat if you'd like to be unmuted to ask your question, or you can type your question into the chat and Kate will ask it for you.
This is Jiko. You used a lot of doing words in that talk. We do a lot here. So I want you to directly address the effort of non-effort, what we have to do to arrive at non-effort.
Practice realization.
Say more.
We do practice. We but the mirror's never had dust on it. But sometimes we need to practice a little to see that. Yeah, it's hard. It's really hard. Does that answer you? And then it gets easy. And then it's hard again.
Thank you for your talk, Sonia. Hogetsu here. When I received my first Roksu over 25 years ago, my teacher wrote on there in Japanese calligraphy. So I didn't know what all the words were on the inside of the Roksu at the time I received it. And eventually somebody read, you know, in addition to my Dharma name, he wrote on there, a true person of no rank. And I didn't know what that meant or what the origin of that saying was. And somebody told me, well, he either gave you a great compliment or he gave you something to live up to. So can you elaborate a little on your understanding of what a true person of no rank entails?
Yes, but I'm more curious how you experience. Would you be willing to share? If you didn't know that term and then you had it on the back of your Roksu, I imagine you spent some time exploring it. Anything that you can tell us about that? Well,
briefly, I guess. I mean, it's a 25-year story. I think it somewhat aligns with my ethical intentions pre-Buddhism. I've always attempted to treat everybody equally and not put myself above or below other people. And that perhaps has extended into my practice. It's, you know, I've never felt called to become a priest, but just through seniority, I have attained a certain stature within the sanghas that I'm part of. But I see myself unranked.
Yeah.
But I know that the term actually goes into other levels of understanding beyond the superficial common sense understanding of it.
Thank you, Ogetsu.
Thank you. It was a good talk.
Thank you.
This is Sarah. Hi. I told you earlier that I really love this topic, and when I saw it, I thought, I'm not going to do anything, including come to the Zendo and listen to the talk. But I did, because I wanted to see it in person. I usually listen on Zoom, but because I take things very literally sometimes. Also, I have this resistance. People who know me know that I have a resistance to lots of things, and this is a big one because, you know, as growing up, I was bullied, and I have a big justice streak in my body. I just talking about it makes my blood pressure start to rise a little bit. So I have this huge justice streak when I see someone bullied or things like that. I my activist self starts to activate. And it's a big practice for me. Chosen once told me to, gave me a practice of staying out of the way. And that's been a big practice. Joko Beck once said, a true bodhisattva is someone that can walk in this earth without judgment. And that's a huge practice as well. It's you'll start analyzing it and saying, well, I'm discerning, not judging, and I'm this and I'm that, thinking of reasons why you need to act in a moment. Yeah. To rescue a child from a who's getting beat up or something like that. I literally had to put a rubber band on my wrist and snap myself every time I judge something, and my wrist was swollen by the end of the day, and I just thought, this is such a hard practice to do nothing.
Yeah.
Stay out of the way, or stay out of your own way.
Yeah.
So it's something I'm still working with after many years of practice. So you're just giving me another shot in the arm and saying, you can do it, Sarah. Thank you for your talk.
Thank you so much for sharing.
This is Dio. Thank you for your talk. I especially appreciate the historical context and insights into your practices. You've been working with this. I just wanted to share a relevant anecdote, which happened last night at the end of Sesshin. A member of the Sesshin, and this happens often, a member of the Sesshin came up to me and was like crying and was like, you don't know, but you were so supportive to me this week, and hugged me. And I was like, man, I was literally just sitting there. And I just think it's amazing how supportive this practice of doing nothing is to the people around us, and how I've felt supported by seeing people just like at ease in many different contexts. So thank you.
Thank you so much for bringing that forward and for offering your practice for others in that way.
Thank you.
This is Genko. So you used a couple of phrases, I think they were both quotes, that I was really struck by. One of them was being able to not stir a thought. I've never heard that word used in that way. And I thought, that is so what we do. And so what I do. And learning not to do that is not easy, but that's where we get into so much trouble. The other one was this different sort of take on illumination as turning attention towards. So that's that bright light that Dogen talks about, that turning the light and shining it inward. And that is definitely doing something. And yet, in a way, it's simply seeing clearly. And that is a little different. So there's a lot of things that we do, like just sitting. Looks like we're doing nothing. And in one way we are, and in another way, we are definitely doing something, just turning that attention. And I don't know, I just love that kind of explanation of what illumination is about. I always talk about just notice. That's all you have to do. You don't have to do anything, just notice.
It's hard.
It is hard. It is hard. And I'll tell you, I'll just respond a little bit to Zara about the judgment thing. I spent a couple of years really paying attention to how often judgment came up for me, and it was appalling. Mm-hmm. And it's been very good practice, and I still return to it. And I find that it still comes up, but now I can just look at it and say, okay, there's judgment, and let it go. Yeah. So it is a practice. Yeah. It takes some time.
I'm glad that you enjoyed a couple of those phrases. I found them just really useful. The non-clinging of the mind today during Zazen, I kept thinking about like cling wrap, just kind of the opposite of cling wrap. It just kind of falls. It doesn't stick.
Yeah, the cling wrap that has sort of lost its oomph.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. This is Andy. The image that came to me, and I'll ask a question quickly here, but the image that came to me when do nothing, as I'm sitting here trying to just be, was the bubble on the stream. Mm. And I sort of, now I'm thinking about doing nothing is almost impossible to really do nothing. But the bubble on the stream is like, you're stepping to this harmonious flow where I'm not fighting the stream's flow. And, you know, you can say, you just step back, and because there's all these little bubbles flowing in the stream, it's this beautiful, perfect stream. But if there's one thing that's going against the stream, it's going to disrupt it and not be natural or something. So can you say something about the connection of doing nothing to sort of harmonious existence, which is something, but effortless?
Yeah. Thank you. That's a big part of what's alive for me in this talk and in my practice, is that lack of resistance, that flow. I think you said it perfectly. When we are quiet and unobstructed, we know that we are flowing. think that's all I've got right now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, Zonio, this is Charlie. You said that Zazen is not quietism, but it is for me at the moment. I could tell when Sasheen ended, I was just immediately kind of ticked off. And the silence going away was just, just like super unpleasant. And I was like, okay, I'm going to wake up early and meditate. So there's definitely like attachment to the quiet. So did you ever experience quietism in Zazen? And do you have anything to say about it?
Yeah. My guess is that's probably okay. You know, I think there's the analogy I can think of for myself is like just the striving that I brought to my practice in my early years, most of my years still. And that's the opposite of doing nothing. And it's sort of an important part of seeing doing nothing. I think you need a whole spectrum of experiences and approaches at different times in your practice. The attachment won't last because you don't have a lot of choice. Something's going to come piss you off. What will probably change is your reactions and the allowance that you have and the tolerance that you have. And those reactions probably won't necessarily change, but your ability to respond differently will.
So is that what the quietism is pointing towards, like the reactions?
Well, you said that, you know, things disturbed you right in the morning and the sounds, right? It's probably easy to have irritation about that. We need some stillness. We need some quiet. Dogen says a quiet room is suitable. I'm always grateful for the stillness and the quiet in this hall. I think the quietism dissolves in terms of both my aliveness in my Zazen, my own personal sense of alive awareness, awakeness that comes from the stillness, and what we do with it when we get up off the cushion, our availability to the world. Sometimes we need a little bit of quiet to touch that availability. But when we step off that cushion, bam, we're ready.
Thank you.
Tony has a question on Zoom.
Excuse me. Yeah, thank you for your talk. Genko said that illumination is turning attention towards something, things. Surely that is quintessentially doing something. And how does that square with Shikantaza just sitting?
Well, I just said, for myself, meditation isn't quiet. It's quiet in terms of my own sense of self and attachment. And as that starts to settle, there's something much richer. But that's not the same as nothing happening. Everything is happening.
But, well, then what is illumination? I'm confused. Talking about the doing thing. Doing can be extremely subtle. It can be saying, it can be moving my attention from, okay, what's happening now, to what do I, it can go all over the place, obviously. But as I understood it, just sitting is not that. Unless I'm completely confused, which is definitely possible.
I'm not sure, Tony. I'm hearing what sounds like kind of a lot of thinking and a lot of kind of perseveration about what needs to happen. And that feels different to me than the doing of awareness.
But there is a fundamental act of turning attention.
Oh, yes, I agree.
So in Shikantaza, I have to give that up. Is that the point? Is that what the point is?
I think what becomes apparent is that there isn't a you to give up.
But something switches attention. Doesn't need to be me.
Yeah, that's what I spoke to with Jiko's question, that we do practice to discover this awareness. Both are true.
Okay, thank you.
This is Jen. I'm curious about doing nothing and interpersonal relationships. And like, while I see like a lot of benefit from like not acting out of emotional reactivity, I also feel concern in myself that if I get so good at not being reactive, like, is there a danger of like me kind of building resentment without really realizing it?
Mm.
And also sort of subconsciously, and yeah. also being taken advantage of in relationships. And yeah. so I'm curious how you navigate that.
Super good question. I think that really relates to the part of my talk where I was talking about how do I know when to do something? Very similar type situations. You know, we have these lives to take care of. We have ways that we need to be so that we can live our lives the most beneficially. And sometimes there are things that feel like they're blocking that. And what do? We just accept that? We try to make a change? It's really tricky. So for myself, I do sometimes choose to assert. And I don't know. It's a little unclear how that goes. But for me, really paying attention to attachment or lack thereof versus something that you think will be contributing to harmony for yourself and for others. So if you're trying to make a change, it's because you want, there's some aspect of kind of small self-clinging. That's a good place to probably pause. And you can start to kind of sort that out. Maybe last one.
Thank you, Sonia. This is Chichiso. I found myself thinking as I was listening both to you and to what followed that, and you can certainly disagree with this, we do nothing so that we may do something.
Mm-hmm.
We do nothing so that we can take in what's around us without too much preconception and filtering, and then we go from there.
Yeah, that unhesitating response.
Sorry?
That unhesitating response, and Ginkgo says the second pure precept.
Okay.
Do good for others. I think you're right on. You just, like I said to Charlie, just bam, you just go. You know what to do, but you have to touch that stillness to know what to do.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.